If you read the piece this week on the site by St Anthony, you'll know that it's 7 weeks since the season finished and the voting's been ongoing and the world-famous Celtic Underground Top 10 has been arrived at by members of the Celtic Underground community. So this is part one of a two-part podcast revealing the Celtic Underground Top 10. The second part will be out in exactly 1 week's time from the release of this podcast. So this week, Andrew and I are going to reveal names, and we do it in reverse order, best Eurovision Song Contest style. Results in reverse order. We are going to do 10 through 5. So we'll leave you all on the tenterhooks as you decide.
And I apologise, it wasn't just a 5 this year, because like, I know for me, I was pegging out at 8. Had to get my boy involved. You've
you
got
managed
to help
to get
me, your
to
son.
8. Well done, you. do you know, there was a couple of seasons under Ronnie Dyler where it was a bit like that as well. It was difficult to pull together a 10. And sometimes it was more as just because nobody was a standout and everybody was all right. Whereas I think this one is even harder. But famously, the Celtic Underground community have been a difficult bunch to please. I remember in the season we had Denier and Van Dijk in the centre-half partnership. I think Van Dijk finished fourth in our top 10. And Denier finished first or second. Denier was ahead of Van Dijk.
Yeah.
And then famously, the reason why the joke is always about if you can't think of who to vote for Salinas. Because famously, Salinas used to do really, it was always in our top three every season when he played. I do sometimes wonder whether, you know how if you're listening to, I know you're not into your boxing, Andrew, but I remember going to a fight at the ACC. It was Chris Eubank against, God, what was his name? Thornton, I think the guy's name was. And the fight, because it was in Glasgow, the fight was on ITV, but in STV it was shown, like, started a wee bit later because it was live in the thing. And I watched it, and the arena emptied as soon as the fight finished because everybody knew Eubank had won. And I got to Fix in Miller Street. That's where I was, went to meet pals in Fix in Miller Street. Bruce and Alan owned Fix, yeah. I have an eye from Fix downstairs in my house on the very last night that Fix finished. Took me and my mates were there the very, very final night and took the stuff off. Before it became Zoots, and then it reopened as Fix 2.
That's right, Fix 2. I used to do a Chris Eubank impression, but I've not done it for ages. So. I am a pugilist. No, like. It's rusty. It's rusty.
Well, all I was going to say is get back, and it's on the telly, and they're talking about how tight the fight was on the telly, and you know, will it, you know, has Eubank won or whatever? And sometimes, the point being, your impression of an event can sometimes be prejudiced by the audio you're listening to as you're watching the event. So I do sometimes wonder if the Celtic Underground, either everybody subscribes to Celtic Underground because they're like-minded people like us, or they're affected by what we say, because we always used to go on about how brilliant Salinas was. And used to love Salinas, so yeah. So those are that's why if you're new to Celtic Underground, you can't understand why in the thing about voting for it, there was a comment about if you don't know who to vote for Salinas. That was the reason why. So I'm giving that a heads up because it might make people think about who's going to be where in our top 10. So, first up in our top 10, Andrew, is a player who... Hold on. Hold your horses.
Don't tell me.
Reminded me. First up in our top 10.
Brilliant. We've gone professional. What have you done to us? The timer was even on there.
Yes, exactly. So, first up is a player who genuinely, this is how we arrived at him. We had no strikers on our books. We sold Adam Ida. We were going to sign Dahlberg, who agreed everything the night before, I think it was the Rangers game. And then the morning of the Rangers game, his agent phoned up and said, no, his wife persuaded him not to go. So that was off. And our coaching team of the time sat with transfermarket.com in one screen and Y-Scout or something else, StatBomb or something, on the other screen, and we're looking down strikers who are out of contract, then looking across and somebody would look at his 5-minute video and go, nah, no him. And they arrived at Kelechi Iheanacho. So some stats for Kelechi Iheanacho: 24 games this season, 9 goals, 890 minutes, 1 assist, 3 yellow cards. I had the chopped off goal in, was it against Braga in European football? Where he played a full 90 minutes in that game. And I'm just trying to look. He played a full 90 minutes against, in the loss to Dundee away, one of Brendan's last games. And then after that was seen as a substitute only player. So Kelechi Iheanacho, Andrew, take it away as to how he's made it number 10 in our top 10 for season 25-26.
Well, the problem, I know from, let's say, trying to dig it in myself, I actually think I put him higher in my own top 10. But the issue was who has made positive contributions. I think, I don't know if everybody else was like me, but I was just saying, have you made positive contributions? Can you remember moments when you think you bolstered Celtic's prospects? And to be fair to him, Iheanacho, he certainly did that. He certainly did that. You think he scored a couple of really important goals. One of them being up at, I think it was up at, you mentioned Dens Park, but that he scored an important goal that day, didn't he? Like, can you see, you're looking down your transfer
Yeah, he scored. He scored against Dundee up at Dens Park, 2-1 victory 2-1. In April.
It didn't look like it was going to happen. And it was, I think it was from, it was a cross ball, wasn't it? Was it a corner? That was the one that everybody said it should have been offside. Remember, there was all the kind of kerfuffle over it being offside. But he scored, he had a couple of important moments. And I think his personality is so important when it comes to playing for Celtic. He had the personality that he felt that he belonged here. Now, he had all the mobility of, we've just been watching him, he had all the mobility of Ronaldo. You know, it was almost as if we've said it before, that he should have been getting wheeled around the pitch and just allowed to kind of drop off near the ball, because he's got a velvet touch. He's definitely got, I mean, nine goals, two of those were penalties, I believe, but were they?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, he scored two penalties against Motherwell. He scored in October, opening goal. And the thing about him, I was going to say, lots of his goals were in victories where we only won by one goal, but that was virtually every game.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. Take away a couple of 4-0s against Falkirk or something at home.
Yeah, that was
Falkirk.
Virtually every game this season. But he scored, opening goal in. He scored in 1-1 against Red Star Belgrade. He scored. We beat Kilmarnock 2-1, and he scored. We beat Motherwell 3-2, he scores. We beat Dundee at Dens Park 2-1, he scores. We beat Hibs 2-1, he scores. And obviously the coup de grace of his goals and the balls of steel goal against at Firth Park.
Yeah, I mean, he could take a penalty as well, and ultimately that proved absolutely paramount in getting over the line, that he didn't fluff any of those penalties. Never looked like fluffing them. He had a real sang-froid, didn't he, like, when it came to taking a penalty. So he thoroughly deserves his place in the top 10, because he made a really telling contribution, as it turned out. Nine goals. I think maybe is that three of them from the spot then? Instead, I said two, but three of them from the spot. Okay, but still nine goals in little under 900 minutes. So that's about a goal, just equivalent of just a goal almost every game, like just over 90 minutes. So it's a goal every 100 minutes. So that's a decent enough return.
Any,
and I mean, I love these. I mean, a couple of, it was classy touches for the for some of his open play goals, and we're not going to forget his little dancing feet at Hampden for the double, that goal he scored. He really, I mean, if he could get fit, but I think, it, does it look like, as O'Neill decided, that he can't rely on him because of his fitness issues?
I mean, he's only 29, he'll be 30 this season. I understand that O'Neill's seriously thinking about offering him something. But I think the deal is how do you offer something that the medical staff are saying doesn't matter how much of a pre-season he has. He's not.
Yeah, I'd heard that, we don't know, you never know if these things are true or not, but just the number of injuries he's had and the number of injections he's taken has put him in a position where he'll never be a guy that you can push through our 90 minutes. He'll never be a guy. I mean, he does look as if he's running in treacle sometimes.
Yeah.
But his hold up play is excellent. Like, he can bring other people into the game. If he was if he was fully fit, he'd probably still be out of Celtic's league in terms of his pedigree.
Correct. I mean, his first period out injured was after the defeat to Dundee under Brendan's final game away at Tynecastle. He's injured, and then he's out, nips back in December. He gets on the bench at the game against Hearts. He gets injured in the League Cup final against.
Without his injury then, because he looked on it that day, and I still maintain that if he'd have stayed fit, because Celtic had gotten top, he was playing well. He was an excellent focal point. He was bringing people into it. He was stretching them. If he hadn't got injured that day, Celtic, it would have been essentially an injury to him, probably cost Celtic the treble.
Then he goes back injured. Then he gets in the team on home to Falkirk. Plays, I think, 6 minutes, goes down injured, and then he's back out, and he's out again until that game. He's on the bench against Motherwell at home, and then he plays in all three of the final league games before the split. Something, and then he plays something in all the post-split games.
Yeah, because remember he said if he stays fit, O'Neill said if he stays fit, we'll need him. But interestingly, O'Neill, I think, one of the few times he played him might have been the only time. Sorry, you've got the stats in front of you and I don't, because I've just driven in here from 8 hours solid driving across fucking Scotland. But he started him up at Tannadice, that dreadful display at Tannadice, and O'Neill seemed to take a lot from that, and thought that was when both, after that, he didn't really use Hitati as much. He kind of blamed Hitati. It was almost he was blaming Hitati and Iheanacho in a way, because Iheanacho, I think he hauled him off. When did he haul him off that day?
57
minutes, yeah. Actually, he wasn't bad that day, but it wasn't happening. The entire team was even more minced than they ordinarily were last season.
So that's Kelechi Iheanacho in at number 10. So next up is number 9. It will get tedious. Number 9 is Austin Trusty. 41 games, 2 goals, 1 assist, 7 yellow cards, 2 red cards. So Austin Trusty, take it away, Andrew.
I also had Austin Trusty higher, because when you think, he was a pretty reliable, I mean, he has his kind of nervy, jumpy moments, but you think about it, he was pretty reliable by and large, and he had some tremendous, when you think about how he played out in Bologna, you think about how he played at Ibrox, that was probably his crowning glory of last season, his performance at Ibrox in the cup game, wasn't it? He just dealt with everything. He's a siege mentality defender, which is not necessarily makes him a natural fit for Celtic, because he seems to...
I think that's part of his problem. If you look back when he's some of his better games, when we've just been playing against the higher quality competition that we can play against, and his job is to defend. Your point about the moments that he might do, that's when he's farting around at the back four.
Yeah.
And just...
You don't want him to have too much time.
No.
To think. But I actually felt he was more than... He was better than Celtic's ninth best player. Do you not think so? I mean, what's your...
Well, it depends. I mean, I think at Celtic sometimes, particularly in a team that conceded as many goals as we did. I mean, I'm looking through, if you look at the league, you know, the last few games, when, you know, I'm trying to go back, we beat St Mirren one.
Yep.
In April. Then he decided, no, so let's go. Then the next time we played a game with him in the team was when we beat Falkirk 1-0 in that real backs to the wall game. So, and that was the 14th of January, and we beat Dundee United at home 4-0 on the 10th of January. So from when Martin came back the second time, there was two games he played in the league where we didn't concede a goal.
Yeah, they did have their longest
run. So I'm not saying he was the fault. I'm just meaning when you've got a defence that's doing that, people are maybe less inclined to then pick defenders in the top 10.
I suppose so. And was it the longest period without a clean sheet, wasn't it?
Something like that.
For decades.
Apart from Auchinleck, we didn't play anybody in the Scottish Cup that we didn't concede a goal to.
Yeah.
And Partick Thistle, when he wasn't in the squad, was the only League Cup game that we didn't concede a goal.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I know people are talking about this enormous rebuild, and there's an enormous rebuild, but whether or not you like it, but you could practically, you've got a back four that doesn't necessarily we're going to see great change in it. Although there's always wee kind of murmurs about trusty interest in German clubs, isn't there?
Yeah, and the German clubs seem to like, you know, I think there's been a few Americans from Germany, same with Japanese. That's why people often link Japanese. I think that Germany's got the highest proportion of Japanese players of any league in Europe.
When you think about it, like diligent, you think about American footballers, they're diligent. You think about Japanese footballers, I don't think there's any other nationality footballers more diligent than. And that suits the German psyche, does it? Or am I getting too stereotypical here?
What are we going to do next? Just say that it goes back to the 1940s, the coalition between the Germans and the Japanese? What's that? In terms of stereotypes. No, but I actually think you're right. I think the Germans and I think American football is much more of a middle-class sport as well. So you're going to be getting educated people. And I think that suits the German system as well.
It does. It does. Yeah. No, Trusty again is you'd like a better centre back pairing. You'd like to improve on Trusty. You'd certainly like to improve on the other guy, no doubt. But they weren't terrible. We've had some terrible centre backs. They weren't terrible. I saw some clips of, you know, because Jack Henry's just signed his new contract and he's the highest paid Scottish international, and somebody ran the clip of him playing Partick Thistle. Just, you seen that one?
No.
And he does two kind of step overs and spins round and he takes the ball in and like, and then he goes all the way out to this side of the pitch. I don't know what he's doing here, right? But it's just, it's almost as if it's a kind of circus show. And then he goes all the way back into the middle of the pitch. And the Partick Thistle player just steams right through him, takes the ball off him, and, you know what I mean? And he's like, but I don't know why he was away out in all these. I mean, it's like him, he's kind of, oh, he's showing all these.
But famously, we ended up signing him because we played Dundee, and it was at the beginning of the season. But it was at the beginning of that season when Scott Sinclair started to not play so well and just couldn't seem to have the confidence to go past people. But this was the first game when that had really happened. And Brendan, somebody once said to me that Brendan suffers from recentism. The thing that happens most recently is the thing that he goes, yeah, that's it. And Henry is up against Scott Sinclair, and Scott Sinclair's anonymous in the game. And Brendan immediately thinks, that boy's got something. We should be signing him. And that's why Brendan liked him.
He talked about him in the Friday press conference. What about that boy? He was wanting us to say, oh, yeah, he's a great player. No, do you mean Jack Henry? Like, you know, before you know it, he signed him. And then he was constantly trying to defend him until he wasn't, until he just, he bumped him. So Trusty, where does Trusty rate in terms of recent Celtic centre-backs? I think there is a level of competence.
I mean, absolutely. I just think that for me, the issue is, and it was shown up right at the end of the season when teams, I think Rangers did this, Hearts did, certainly did it. Let Celtic play about the back and just let Trusty have the ball. Close down everybody else and let Trusty have the ball.
Yeah, they even changed for, like, they were doing that with Scales plenty, but it was like, whoa, somebody's even more like a...
Hold my beer.
Somebody's even more kind of like a... Kind of, he can tie himself in knots if you just let him play it out.
Yeah, which, you know, I suppose that's one of the things. It's the challenge of, we need a guy who can just defend. You know, it's like when people then talk about Lagerbielke, look at him, he's at the World Cup with Sweden. Yeah, but he was signed, he was actually scouted and signed, or scouted when Ange was the manager, and then signed when Brendan's the manager. Can you imagine a guy with that lack of pace standing at the halfway line as with Narowski, who also had no pace, and the ball just played over the top of him? You'd be stuffed. Yeah. And that's the thing. A player might look okay in one team, but you've got to think how you plays for Celtic, and obviously the nature of Celtic centre-halves for the majority of time that we are playing football, whoever we've got as manager, just the way modern football's organised tactically, our centre-halves are going to have a lot of the ball. And if you've got a centre-half who can't distribute it, that's an issue.
Of course, you can't even write them off, because one of these two, even the current, I'm talking about the current back four, but you've got to remember there is three centre-backs for that position, because Cameron Carter-Vickers, he seemed to be training towards the end of last season, so you would imagine that he will be fit to go by the start of this season.
So we'll see how that goes. That's the first two. Ian Acho, number 10. Trusty at number 9.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair enough.
So next up in the Celtic Underground top 10 for season 25-26, next up is Yang.
Again, I had Yang higher. Wee Stevie's probably putting his foot through the... He'll be putting his foot... If he hasn't done it now...
Until he sees towards the top of the table.
Yeah. put his foot through his computer. But again, Yang was the most effective winger Celtic had. He scored important goals. He got any double figures for goals.
Yeah, well, so his stats are 47 appearances, 10 goals, 3 assists, which surprised me being low. Again,
thought
all these stats
on
transfer markets. If there's any dubiety or if they're slightly wrong, well, they're wrong for everybody. 2 yellow cards, 3,068 minutes. A guaranteed starter towards the beginning, but pretty much became fixed from November onwards.
Yeah. So that is you said 3,000 minutes. So that's about 35 game equivalent of 35 full games. Again, because nobody was, that, apart from the obvious ones, but there were very few nailed down positions in the Celtic team last year. You've seen it previously, apart from injury, you knew exactly who was going to play, especially in the wide areas. It was only latterly that Yang really did. And probably O'Neill turned Yang's Celtic career around. Because he was...
Well, he was going out the door last summer.
He was going out the door last summer, and he never featured that much. I mean, it's incredible how quickly you think, like, Rodgers was only there until the middle of October or whatever, so he really was only there 10 weeks of this season.
The thing, I remember thinking about Yang when it looked like we were going to sell him in the summer. I remember saying that I thought he would go down to Birmingham, play in the Championship, and be a star. Or one of the better players in the Birmingham team. And that would probably be enough for a team towards the bottom of the English Premiership to pick him up for some, say, so, you know, he goes down there, team in the bottom of the English Premiership pick him up for maybe 9 million quid, something like that. 9, 15 million quid, somewhere in that band, because there's crazy money down there. He would then not succeed there. and then he would get back down to another championship team who would pick him up for maybe 6-7 million, and then that would be his level, somewhere at the top end of the English championship. That's where he
kind
would
of be. Paddy Roberts.
He'd have a really good career. Yep.
Although, and I absolutely maintain this, O'Neill gave him confidence. Remember the famous, when he thought he was leaving O'Neill, well, he was leaving for the first time he left, and you saw the famous dressing room, like when he was saying about Negrin, you're the fourth most famous Swede now after ABBA and Henrik and all this. And he gets Yang and he kind of gets him in a kind of embrace. He says, keep it up, son, keep it up. Because he'd given him that confidence, because he got a lease of life from O'Neill taking over that he was never going to get from Rodgers. Rodgers had kind of given up on him, but sometimes you needed him off the bench.
I think Rodgers had seen the thing in him that I was just describing that could make him a player, but every time he played him in a big game, he mucked it up. If you think of the cup final.
Yeah, although he got so much stick over that. But then he wasn't that player anymore. Towards the end of the season, he had real dig. Do you remember? I mean, it was such a shame for him, personally, the New Year derby. Because he was electric. First half, that goal he scored, that was my favourite goal of the season. Because you don't see it as a favourite goal because it's a Celtic goal in a 3-1 defeat by Rangers, but it was a phenomenal goal, and that showed that he even retained that confidence, and he got in. He was the only, you could, previously people would say, oh, he wasn't backing up his fullback and all that. I think they changed that. He certainly, under O'Neill, there was evidence of greater dig. He was aggressive. He was a pretty aggressive player, and he developed that aggression.
And I think one of his challenges as well is the fact that we had no right winger in the team, and he's right footed and was better on the right than any other option that we had to play on the right. But his best position is left wing. So I think that was also a challenge, in that he was playing both right wing and left wing. Right wing because we had nobody else bar the very aging James Forrest, and left wing was his preferred position, but we needed somebody who could at least turn up and exist on the right wing more than anybody else. So he kept getting played there. And then, when Iheanacho would come on, well, Maeda would not be put over to the left. And Iheanacho through the middle in the final sort of 9 games that was happening. So he was also not playing his preferred position.
Yeah. And he also got himself, he showed enough. He got himself a contract extension towards the end of last season. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, the great rebuild doesn't need to happen. Just get on the phone and catch it. Like, hey, come on back, fella. Big fella.
You got to remember, I mean, when he signed for us, he was what, 21, 22? He's come halfway across the world at a really young age to settle in. And I'm not saying that he's the answer of the standard that Celtic should, perhaps we should be aspiring to better than Yang for wingers at Celtic Park.
But it's quite a turnaround in his career, because he was getting kind of labelled as one of the worst players you've ever seen for Celtic a year ago. Nobody would say that now. I think there is a growing appreciation of him. It was a bit like, and I'm no getting stereotypical, because just because my latest memory of Yang is watching him up front, coming off the bench, him and South Korea were almost as disappointing as Scotland in their own way. But look, everybody thought there's something in Ole, but Celtic couldn't quite unlock it. And you felt that there was a wee bit of that with Yang. But I think through O'Neill, we've gone some way to unlocking that.
So that's the first three of the Celtic Underground top 10 for season 25-26. Iheanacho, 24-game player, and even then, most of those games were 30 minutes.
Yeah, 24 appearance player, about 8 games or something. No.
Trusty, and now Yang. So we are on to selection number 7, which for me, this one has been done on personality. as much as what they've and some inspiring moments in the team. So number seven is Marcelo Saracchi, 27 games, one goal, two assists, three yellow cards, just 967 minutes. Another player who was out for a chunk of the season. He missed, I think it was end of November through to middle of January with a hamstring injury. Andrew, and of course, he's signed as a deputy. The only reason we managed to get him is because we've got someone who understands the South American market, managed to pull a rabbit out of the hat. It was not going to happen if Tisdale had his way. Matthew, Andrew, even. Tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be. Tell me about Saracchi.
Saracchi was a player for Celtic game-chasing situations. You noticed that it became very noticeable how he was used by O'Neill. Because Celtic, mostly, they weren't chasing games under O'Neill, it has to be said. They were trying to hold on to something. So that's why Saracchi's minutes became strained. Because everybody kept saying, why is this guy not playing more? When you saw him, when he was making these cameos. And clearly, he's got craft. He's got genuine craft. The way he drove, remember, towards the end of the season, was against Rangers, wasn't it? That he really set up one of the goals, wasn't it? Like he came from deep and he started the move. Or was that? Am I getting mixed up with it? Was it even Hearts?
Was it not the Hearts game?
It
was the Hearts game because Hearts were sitting off us and just Hearts was had sat off us and allowed our two centre-halves, as we discussed, to have the ball. Suddenly Martin goes to a back three, or effectively it was a back two because Hearts had gone so defensive. And it meant Saracchi was effectively able to play as almost like a number 10 coming from defence, playing out from defence.
He played as a playmaker.
Yeah.
And he was really good. He's really good. He's a really progressive player, but I have my questions over his defensive nous.
Yeah, he came on at Fir Park with about 20 minutes to go in the famous handball game. 17 minutes to go, actually, I've just checked. Mullow ripped us apart down the left-hand side as soon as he came on.
They did. He missed. He rashly jumped into a couple of challenges when they were working the ball down his flank. I mean, a good, decent player. He would be a good squad player. A guy that you're worried about when you see him coming on. I think it would be judicious to maybe use. I didn't think I would say this a year ago. I was saying he wasn't hardly going to play, but it would be judicious maybe not to try and squeeze the games out of Tierney, to try and kind of mix and match with Tierney and Saracchi. I think we'd all be happy at that. There's certain games that you could use Saracchi for.
There's a lot of debate online. Maybe by the time this goes out, it'll have changed. But anyway, there's a lot of debate online. A criticism of the club online because we've not secured Saracchi. It's one of these ones where, as I understand it, Saracchi would quite like to play for Celtic next season. But Saracchi would also like a guarantee of considerably more minutes next season than he got this season.
I think a lot
of the stuff in the press that comes out is his agent pushing his player and also making it known to other people that there's a player that's available for European as well as South American footballs.
28 now, isn't he? So he's in his peak years.
Yeah, this is the move that's got to be his move that makes his money for him.
And I'm sure, in terms what he was on and what Celtic would be offering him, it probably would be a decent enough package.
Yeah, it just depends.
A decent enough uptick.
Yeah, it just depends. It's as you know, is he prepared to come when he knows that he's second choice to Kieran Tierney? That's the other aspect. You know, how much does he want to come, and how much is his agent using Celtic to generate interest for other clubs? You know, we don't know.
Yeah.
At least
Martin O'Neill learned his name by the second spell the second spell of his second spell. Like,
so that's Marcello Cerace. The next one, it reminds me earlier on when I said about...
And it was a great goal he scored, remember? It was a great goal. It was about a 20-yarder, wasn't it? Cerace's one goal. Again, it was like Celtic were struggling to break. Was it Motherwell?
No, Livingston.
Livingston. They were struggling to break them down.
Yep, 2-1. Again, 2-1. Another goal in a game. Up, conscious of the time, want to move on to the next player. And this next player reminds me of the comment I made about when we had Van Dijk and Denier at the club. And Van Dijk finished like fourth or fifth or something. But when we sell this player for 25, 30 million quid, and in a couple of years' time, in 10 years' time, people look back and go, when you had this guy at the club, he finished sixth in the Celtic Underground top 10. And that's Arne Engels.
Well, I had him lower. I have to say, I had him lower.
Because
he was out for a fair old spell.
Yeah, 46 games. I was actually surprised it was as many as that. 46 games, 7 goals, 8 assists, 10 yellow cards, which is interesting for St. Anthony, who says he's a wimp and doesn't go into challenges. 10 yellow cards, 8 assists, which in our season...
I'm surprised at that as well.
3,100 minutes. But yeah, he had a period at a crucial time in the season, February through to more or less the split. He was out, or January, February time through to the split. He was out at a real crucial time for us in the season.
And he made a big difference when he came back.
He does. He just makes the team tick. You can't put your finger on it, but the team just performs
it. He balances it as well. And I think it's not quite the kind of double pivot once he comes back, but I think he takes that. See, if you look at Callum McGregor's better performances, Engels tends to be in the team. Engels is taking a bit of the pressure off him, because Celtic don't have many mobile players. I'd been hearing behind the scenes our manager's kind of worried about the kind of energy levels.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what you don't worry about that a bit from Engels. But as to be said, I know Stephen Ryan, when I said, well, I know there's the Raskin haters. Fair enough for he's all to hate Raskin. And I actually didn't mind him as an interview, but I know that's not the point, and he has a wee nyaff on the pitch and all that. But I have to say, I've been quite impressed watching him for Belgium this World Cup. I know he tends to play, again, he plays cameos, but he's a good passer of the ball. He sees a good, I can see why they use him, but he's getting into the squad. All these people that think Raskin's pish and Engels is great, it's like, well, he made it in the squad. I know they're not the exact same player, but they're still midfielders. They're still, they still thought Raskin was helped their squad better than Engels would have helped their squad.
Phil Foden and Cole Palmer can't get in the England squad. Sometimes it's about the mix of the squad.
But yeah,
rather
I get
than individual players. And if you look at the period that Engels was out in February through to April, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 league games that he was out, we lost 2 and drew 1 of those games. So in a 7 game
was
window,
it was a huge fill up when he came back. That was when it started to turn, and although I never ever thought it would happen, the rest of his, in absolute fairness to his, you were seeing it stirring. All these, Eddie Pearson, Stephen Ryan, you, Harry Brady, I was just the doubting Thomas.
Yeah, well, I just thought we'd pull through because the mentality would get us there.
But one of the reasons they pulled through was because Engels was back.
Because Engels got in the team, yeah.
Because Engels
and he just made
back.
He just made, my point about him is he's just always there as the next option when we've got play in and around that sort of middle third section of the pitch. He's always available as the next option ball, always. He just keeps the ball moving, stops it being so static.
He's 7 goals. Was there not some mad stat about when he scored? Was it against Hibs?
Yeah.
The header against Hibs, that was his first goal from open play. something like a year or something.
It was his first goal for open play for Celtic. Yeah, oh no, he'd had a goal last season, but it was deflected. He'd taken a shot last season, I think it was, that hit off somebody and deflected in. So it was his first, he'd hit it and it went in the back of the net, goal for Celtic. So that's Engels. We're now reaching the end of this episode. This, the first six players in the list. And the next player, a bit like you, I had this player, I actually had him one place further up in the league table than this. And the next player is our captain, Callum McGregor.
It was very hard to judge Callum McGregor this season. I felt, me and my boys spoke about this quite a bit. How did we? He's not quite the Callum McGregor of old. I mean, the Huddle Breakdown guys will give you all the stats on that. It's just the diminishment with age. We've talked about it on this podcast in the past about how trying to make those challenges, and you see it in Europe, and you saw it against Rangers, I would say more than, he wasn't, those challenges where he just seemed to be able to just nip in and win the ball. It wasn't quite happening for him. You know, he wasn't, that, I know that wasn't the central component of his game, but when he has to play that as the deep lying midfielder, he had it all. Callum McGregor had it all. He could take the ball for a run. We saw less of that because obviously he's not quite get the same zip, the same kind of edge to his game. But ultimately, again, when his team really needed him, probably some of his better performances were than the last 2 months. And again, and he kind of kept them together. It was interesting, Kieran Tierney talking about it when they won the league, when he was interviewed in the pitch. And he said, you know, I almost kind of like, I love this win for the captain because nobody knows just how much he does for us behind the scenes. And I think he's a phenomenal Celtic captain. Like, I love having Callum McGregor as my captain because what an ambassador he is for the, and what he's given to Celtic. So even if there was a wee bit of sentiment involved from him, because I did find it difficult. He's scoring went off the edge of a cliff, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
So,
Winner, the 90-odd minute winner.
St Mirren.
Oh, wait, St Mirren.
That, and a game that would have had football cancelled.
Oof.
57 games, 1,037 minutes, 3 goals, 2 of which were in the league, 1 was in the League Cup, 4 assists, 12 yellow cards.
Which is maybe backing our point up. That's probably the most yellow cards he's ever had in a season for Celtic. In fact, I think we can say that with it.
One of his goals was the 3-1 defeat against Hearts.
Well, that was a good goal, actually.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was the wonder strike against St Mirren.
Yeah. What was his other goal?
That was, let me see. Yes, the 3 goals. I'm just quickly flicking through. The other goal, I think, was in the League Cup against Rangers.
God, imagine we forgot. I was thinking it was probably Auchinleck Talbot or something like that.
So, Callum McGregor.
No, it wasn't Auchinleck Talbot. It was a team that are not quite as bitter as Auchinleck Talbot.
So, Callum McGregor rounds up our first group of players in the Celtic Underground top 10. He, as our captain, was ever present. I think it'll be really interesting to see if Callum McGregor gets in the top 10 next season, considering that Callum McGregor, mid-contract at age 33, has just changed his agent.
And he's just, as you know, just turned 34.
Oh, has he just turned? Hold on, I'll just tell you, actually. His birthday. He's just turned 33. 93 he was born. So he's just turned 33.
Right.
But he's changed to the same agency as Brendan is on, Unique Sports. And of course, we've now got Brendan and Ange in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying he's going to go to Saudi Arabia. And the Saudi transfer window finishes, I think, 10 days, 2 weeks after the Scottish transfer window in the summer. So, but the other hand, why would you change your agent mid-contract at 33? Because the new agent's getting nothing out of it unless something happens. So unless he's prepping for life after Celtic, but he doesn't, and he's just gone early, I just think that's an interesting choice.
That is. Well, I mean, he would go away. Sure, every Celtic supporter's blessing if that's what he decides to do. He's got nothing more. He doesn't need to prove anything more here.
Yeah. So, Celtic Underground top 10 season 25-20. Running in this order, we have Kelechi Iheanacho. Maybe I should be playing this sort of music in the background.
Yeah.
I don't know how to turn it down, so it's far too loud. So, Kelechi Iheanacho at number 10, Austin Trusty number 9, Yang 8, Sorachi 7, Engels number 6, and Callum McGregor number 5. So that's, I can't be bothered doing it any longer.
Alan Fluff Freeman.
Yeah, one for the kids. So that's the Celtic Underground top 10, the first six names on it for season 25-26. If you want to listen to next week's podcast, we will have the top four. You can probably have your guesses who's in the top four. Players that we've not mentioned, I'm sure you'll have people will have a very good guess as to who's in our top four. It's where they are in the top four.
Yeah. You can judge from it. I should have done my Casey Kasem. Should have been a top 10. Remember, I just...
Keep your feet in the ground, but keep reaching for the stars.
Stars, yeah.
So that is the Celtic Underground top 10 first six for season 25-26. And I'll say, Andrew H, thanks very much.
Thank you, Harry. Hi.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.